The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
For years, tech startups could do no wrong. They were changing the world, and always for the good. Everything changed when office leasing startup WeWork imploded last year. Much of the hype that built up WeWork and tech unicorns can be tied to SoftBank, a Japanese telecom giant that has poured $100 billion worth of investment into startups. It's become the face of tech's failures. But ask SoftBank, and for the most part, things are still going according to plan. I'm Alex Yule. This week on The Readback, we're talking to Eric Savitz, who covers tech for Barron's from Silicon Valley. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Alex. How are you?
I'm good. I want to start by reading you a quote from a well-known CEO. Here it is. "I'm convinced that the information revolution will be the largest revolution in human history, surpassing the length of the Industrial Revolution and lasting for more than 300 years. So most folks on Wall Street can barely think 1 year in advance, let alone three centuries. So who is that?
Yes, that would be Masayoshi Son, who is, of course, the founder and CEO of SoftBank.
Tell us more.
So Masa is a fascinating character. Masa thinks in very long time frames, and he has been investing quite successfully for a long period of time. He made what has been one of the best single venture investments of all time, which was SoftBank's investment in Alibaba, which is now worth about $150 billion. They own close to 90% of the equity in Sprint, and they own about two-thirds of the equity in SoftBank KK, which is the spinoff that is a mobile wireless carrier in Japan.
Got it. And what makes it really interesting, and I think why everyone wants to talk about SoftBank these days, and certainly why we like to write about it, is because of their venture capital arm. Give us a little more about what that is.
Yes. So SoftBank Vision Fund is a $100 billion fund, by far the largest venture capital pool in existence. The notion that Masa had with the fund was that you can make very large bets by writing checks that other people couldn't write, that they can fundamentally accelerate business growth.
Why are you so willing to take so much risk?
Because I'm a believer. I am definitely a believer of the technology. Some people don't like technology as an investment thesis. I believe in the technology.
And we're talking about billion-dollar checks.
Like billion-dollar checks, yeah. So this is quite an unusual situation that they can write checks of that size.
So give us some examples of these world-changing companies that Masa and SoftBank have been picking and investing in.
Sure. So, for example, they are probably the world's largest investor in ride-sharing. They own a stake in Uber.
Okay.
They own a large stake in Didi, the Chinese ride-sharing company. And then they own a stake as well in a company called Grab, which is another Asian ride-sharing company. He is a big believer that those companies are changing the nature of transportation.
Autonomous driving is coming no matter what. Okay, that's a technology. That's a destiny of where technology is going to drive us.
Kind of in a related space, he is a big believer in the food delivery business.
Okay.
They own a big stake in DoorDash. He's made some big bets on real estate plays, on the future of real estate. One that has attracted a lot of attention recently is a company in India called Oyo Rooms. Mm-hmm. It's O-Y-O Rooms. Oyo is a very large hotel business where they take independent, smaller hotels, but then kind of adds them to a single platform, a single network, tries to help them improve their businesses. But they've grown very, very fast, which is in part the result of getting a lot of SoftBank money, but lately have run into some financial problems and had to scale back their growth. And there are other companies in that real estate sector, Compass, which is a newer real estate firm. And of course, we would be neglectful not to talk about WeWork.
Right. I wanted to come to WeWork.
Yeah. So, you know, WeWork has been a debacle for them, right? They invested billions of dollars in WeWork on the theory that they were going to fundamentally change the market for office space, in particular for short-term office space. Uh-huh. Mouse has been a huge believer in the company. And, you know, of course, as we all know, the company tried to come public late last year. The IPO filing crystallized some investor concerns, one, that the company was not performing very well financially, was losing money, two, that it might be vulnerable to a severe downturn in the event of a slowing of the economy, and then three, and maybe most significantly, that the management team at WeWork was not doing a good job on corporate governance.
Yeah.
And that raised questions about two things involving SoftBank. One, whether this we can put huge amounts of money in something and have it pay off, whether that was really a good strategy. And then secondly, really raised questions about whether SoftBank was doing enough supervision over the companies in its portfolio. So he has had a reputation of being a brilliant investor, and he has substantially dinged his reputation in the last few months.
Of course, what's so interesting here is when your investing timeline is 300 years or even 100 years, one slip-up or even a few slip-ups over 6 months really doesn't seem to matter all that much if you're Masa.
Yeah, and I think you can see that in what's been happening over the last few months, right? So his stock has been hurt by some trouble with the Vision Fund, and I don't think he is particularly worried about that because he thinks that in the long run, his view will pay off.
Can you be an investor and have that kind of timeline? I mean, let's be honest here. Is that just like a pie-in-the-sky nice idea, or can you really make money that way?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that 300-year thing. Obviously, Barron's doesn't have a lot of 300-year-old readers.
Not quite, at least.
But, you know, what's interesting is that notion kind of echoes something that's been said repeatedly by his friend Jack Ma, who, of course, is the founder of Alibaba. He only talks about 100-year timelines, not 300-year timelines.
Okay.
But this Asian notion of having long periods of time to develop companies is at the heart of this idea that SoftBank isn't just trying to generate quarterly or even annualized returns, that it's trying to build a business that will change the world. You can make fun of that, certainly. It's easy to make fun of that idea, especially coming from a world where quarterly returns actually have a lot of significance. But that is Masa's way of looking at the world. And it does filter into his investment strategy on trying to pick things that he thinks have the potential for dramatic change in the long run.
And of course, one of the reasons we really care about SoftBank is they're not just investing in these companies, but they're bringing along the rest of technology investing. So they're bringing along all of venture capital with them. They write huge checks. The rest of the venture capital world, largely in Silicon Valley, has to follow. And basically, we've created this whole generation of what we call unicorns, these billion-dollar plus companies. There are 200 to 300 of them about now, all worth huge amounts of money based on huge ideas, arguably backed by SoftBank. Even if SoftBank hasn't paid for all of them, they've kind of lifted all boats.
So it has a couple of impacts, right? So one is some people in the venture capital community are uncomfortable with that role that they have because they have so much capital, right? Because what it implies is that they're warping the market.
Yeah.
Imagine you were selling your house and then someone came to town and was willing to pay 10 times as much as anyone else for any given house.
Great for me.
I wanted to buy 10 houses, right?
Yeah.
So if you're the person who's in the process of selling that house, you might be pretty happy about that. But if you were trying to buy the house,
not so good. Yeah.
You might not be that happy about it, right? So it does warp the market, and it does raise this notion about whether some companies are getting more capital than they need and that it's leading to some bad behavior by companies with too much capital.
And that's why, just to sort of underline it, that's why the WeWork moment was such a big deal, because it was kind of this reckoning, right? Now everyone's like, see, we told you, SoftBank was putting too much money in, these companies aren't really worth this. And ever since, we've been reading all these stories and writing a lot of stories about the fact that now venture capitalists and even public market investors are taking a new scrutiny to these companies.
Yeah, and I think it's right to take due scrutiny to these companies. What's difficult to know for sure is whether It's simply that the strategy of the Vision Fund isn't working, or it's a matter of, look, they've made more than 80 investments.
Yeah.
They've had about 7 or 8 IPOs, including not just Uber, but also Slack.
Right.
And they've also done some individual transactions. So they owned a piece of company called Flipkart, which was later acquired. They own a big stake in NVIDIA, in which they generated a big return. So they've had some pretty good transactions along the way.
Yeah.
I think what they get attention for are not just WeWork, but other things that to some people look like maybe they weren't such a good idea, though they owned a stake in a company called WAG, which is basically a dog walking business, and then later sold that stake at a loss. And, you know, they were kind of getting made fun of for like investing a lot of money in what is basically a dog walking business.
I was going to say, that's what you get when you invest in a dog walking business.
Well, and that, right. And so that's the risk. And I think that one of the challenges they now face is as they identify new investments, is the capital offset by some sort of taint that their money is somehow perceived as maybe not the smartest money.
Right. Got it. So it's our job at Barron's to be contrarians. Over the summer, you had actually written a cover story about SoftBank and about the value that was still locked inside this company. That hasn't looked so good either in the last few months, that story, that call.
So that story started with kind of a basic value investing premise, which is that the sum of the parts at SoftBank were worth more than the market was giving them credit for. So we did the math. If you add up the value of their stakes in Alibaba, in Sprint, in their mobile phone business in Japan, and various other things that they own, and then even after you back out, say, the debt on their balance sheet and you take a haircut to the valuation of the assets for, you know, potential tax liability, what you still end up with is the conclusion that the value of the stock is dramatically below the value of the assets, and so that it's kind of an arbitrage situation, right? And part of the structure of the story was that you get all that, and then you kind of get the Vision Fund piece for free because of the value of the other asset.
Got it.
Where we got tripped up was on what has transpired in the Vision Fund, particularly around WeWork and people raising questions about Masa's investment prowess.
Right. So you did the math. Made a lot of sense. I remember the story well. We worked on it together. And then we sort of all everyone got embarrassed. Anyone associated with SoftBank got embarrassed. It's been about 8 months since then. Just this past week, though, there was sort of an interesting development. So here we are kind of in some ways feeling bad and feeling wrong about our SoftBank pick. And all of a sudden, Elliott Management, one of the most successful activist hedge funds there is, turned out they had invested over $2.5 billion in SoftBank.
That activist hedge fund, Elliott Management, run by Paul Singer, has taken a stake in Japanese investment conglomerate SoftBank. Now, according to the Wall Street Journal,
what argument were they making?
Well, remarkably, they were making the argument that the sum of the parts is actually more valuable than the current stock price.
They say, quote, Elliott's substantial investment in SoftBank Group reflects its strong conviction that the market significantly undervalues SoftBank's portfolio of assets. Elliott has engaged privately.
They were making the same argument that we made last June. Now, I think, you know, there's some things have changed since that time period, in particular these questions around the Vision Fund, but their position is a similar one. According to the Wall Street Journal, they've made a couple of specific requests. They would like SoftBank to consider repurchasing a substantial amount of its stock as a way to help close the discount. And they've asked for some improvements in the company's approach to corporate management responsibility around the companies in the fund, which is a very reasonable request, right?
Right.
But what it does show you is that a very shrewd investor is now putting pressure on Masa to do something to address the large discounts. And I think it shows that you can be bearish on Masa, but it's hard to get around the fact that they own $150 billion worth of Alibaba and they have a market cap under $100 billion.
I think it's a good bet to think that Elliott probably read your story during their due diligence in the recent months. I don't know that for sure, but I think it's a pretty good guess. So tell us, and Elliott, maybe, where do you think this story goes next? What do we hear from Masa going forward?
I don't think this is necessarily a hostile approach by Elliott here. And I think some additional pressure on Masa to take a more rigorous approach to his investments is logical and would be welcomed by most of the parties who touch on the situation. You know, a few months ago, I was at an event that SoftBank held for the CFOs of the companies in the Vision Fund, and Masa gave a short taped address.
Yeah.
One of the things he talked about was the fact that they needed to really focus on companies producing cash flow, right? Which is classic way of valuing businesses, you know, discounted cash flow models. And Masa talked about how, you know, you shouldn't be valuing companies on user counts or, you know, eyeballs or any other like non-operating metrics, that what matters is your ability to produce cash.
Wow.
And that's a much more practical level way of thinking about it than we're investing for a 300-year time horizon.
Yeah.
And I think one that has the promise of addressing some of the excesses that have been apparent in the Vision Fund in recent months. And, you know, time, of course, will tell. These are venture investments, so they don't all get settled in the short run. There is a long-run component, even if it's not 300 years. But I think that this is a good sign that some very serious investors both see the value and are putting on pressure on SoftBank to find ways to realize some of that value.
And so maybe the best case scenario for investors out there is the guy with the 300-year time horizon meets the hedge fund with the quarterly time horizon, and put them together and you get the perfect investment.
We'll watch and see if the magic happens.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Eric.
My pleasure.
The day after Eric and I spoke, SoftBank got good news. A U.S. federal judge approved Sprint's merger with T-Mobile. The deal essentially saves Sprint, which is a major SoftBank holding. SoftBank shares soared 12%, and the stock is now up 26% over the last week. To read our ongoing coverage of SoftBank, including details from the company's latest earnings report this week, check out Barron's.com. I'm Alex Yule. The show is produced by Meta Lutzhoft. The Readback will return next Wednesday.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.